This is CliffCentral.com.
Is this thing on? You're listening to The Bounce Show. It's live. Well, not this bit, but it's live on CliffCentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, lads.
Sorry, scrap that, delete it. CliffCentral.com.
All right, hello, welcome to The Bounce Show, 15th of March, and it's a great week so far because, well, the Proteas and the Australians, what a series that is, and Kakisa Rabada is appealing that ridiculous ban that he has been sentenced to, where he'll miss essentially the rest of the Aussie series. So two matches to go. Of course, is SA versus Australia at Newlands from the 22nd, so in a week's time that will start. Hopefully this ban can be uplifted, hopefully common sense prevails. The only thing is that, well, Rabada's a repeat offender. We'll get into that a little bit later. We've also got rugby to talk. There's a fair amount on the go there. There's also lots of golf. There's the Tour Championships for the Sunshine Tour this week. And I'd love to recap on actually my trip to the BMW Golf Cup International World Final from last week. Like, I've been lucky enough to do some incredible golfing things. I mean, not just locally, but abroad as well. But last week was so incredibly special. So we'll chat about that too. But we got a star guest, Thando Roto. He is a sprinter from South Africa. He is, well, he's run a 9.95, and that in, I think it's the third fastest time a South African has ever run over the distance. And as you know, I'm a massive fan of sprinting. I absolutely love it. Usain Bolt has been sort of like a sporting hero of me for quite some time. I don't really have sporting heroes, but that guy for me was like the epitome of a sporting superstar. So Thando is a young guy. He's already making great waves in the sport, and him and his coach Henny Creel, they came to studio to record a little bit with Ray Wixell and I. Now, as you know, Ray was on the show a couple of weeks ago. I didn't really give him the intro that he fully deserved. I mean, this guy is a legend in the world of athletics and just such an interesting guy. So he suggested that we chat to Thando, and it was just great that he got him to come into studio, because right now in his schedule, he's recovering from some injuries. He's obviously in, you know, all these guys have intensive programs where studio time isn't the easiest thing they can commit to. Anyway, him and Henny Creel came through, and Henny in himself, I mean, he was also just a massive highlight. This guy used to coach rugby. He was instrumental in the Bulls when they were in their glory days, and now he's focusing his time completely on athletics. He coaches more than 30 athletes. So this interview is something that we're going to be doing more of. So we're touching on the business of sport, getting into the nuts and bolts of what makes a champion. So here we have Thando Roto and his coach Henny Creel, along with Ray Wixell.
Right, so a few weeks ago, we had a guy called Ray Wixell on the show. You remember Ray? He's an ex-track star from America. Last week's show was all about Roger Bannister and paying tribute to him. Well, Ray was actually a guy who went out on the track. He broke the four-minute mile on many, many occasions. And we had a little sort of promise to you that we're going to start bringing in some real high-profile athletics guests. If nothing else, we're going to get guys who are just physically incredible, doing great things in the world of sport. And look at this, delivering this week. Ray, nice to have you back in.
Well, it's great to be here, Ben.
Now, Ray and I chat a lot offline, so to speak. So Ray's been doing an incredible thing recently. You've been consulting to a country outside of South Africa about athletics going forward.
Yes, I just got back from Namibia. I met with the Olympic Committee and try to help them in rugby, cricket, and track and field, and so on. It was a great experience.
Fantastic. Well, what Ray's also done is he's got a young track star in the studio today. Thando Roto, pleased to meet you. Welcome to the studio.
Pleased to meet you too. Thank you.
And even better than that, Coach Henny Creel sitting right next to him. Now, Henny, I did some research on you. The things you have done in sport.
Yeah, I've got many years involvement in sport. First as an athlete and a rugby player myself, growing up in South Africa. It was a given, but I always had a passion for coaching, and I started at a very young age and happy to still be going.
All right, so we got these two young men in the studio, and Ray. And we're going to basically get through, like, something that I love about sport is that it is entertainment. So we have all the stars we need. We have these unpredictable plot lines, and every sport dishes up its own story. Now, Ray, with your involvement in Nike back in the day, your involvement physically with athletics, there's something that, I mean, you'll be able to tell me this. So there's something about athletics that makes it a little bit more special, because the dedication, the commitment from athletes to get to the top, I think is slightly different than any other sport. Henny, you can also touch on this because you have a rugby background. So we're going to talk sprinting today. We're going to talk about making it a champion, because in front of us here, we have potentially one of the great South African sprinters in our time. Thando has already gone sub 10. He's got a fastest of 9.95. So, Thando, let's start off with you. The obvious question, how did you get into the sport, and when did you realize that you really had a talent for the track?
I actually got into the sport through school, in high school, when I was watching the guys I played soccer, cricket, and rugby with. And I noticed, actually, I'm faster than most of the guys. And then when it came to inter-high, and then I took a chance, and then... Yeah, I beat most of them, and then I was like, okay, this is where I belong.
So it wasn't a surprise to you when you got on the track and you were like, I can totally take these guys?
It wasn't, but also it was a surprise that I took them on so easily, so yeah.
And then from there, you didn't really want to focus on any other sport?
This was, yeah, okay. I was like, this is where I belong, so I took it as a profession.
Now, when did the relationship between you and Henny come into fruition? Because, Henny, obviously you are associated with a variety of stars. You know, I think if I was a young, talented person, I would seek out your attention for sure. When did the two of you get together as a professional unit?
I think it was 2012. We've got a private sports school at a university, the Tuck Sport High School. And I was the head coach sprint. I'm still the head coach for sprints there. And Thando joined the school. He actually didn't want to come and train with me. He wanted to train with the middle distance guys. But they forced him, and we developed a good relationship, and it just grew from there. So I coached him since, I think it's 2012.
Since 2012, yeah.
And straight away, I mean, obviously raw talent is something that you'll see from time to time, but when does, in your mind, raw talent become something that you want to work with or you see potential in? I know this is quite a broad question, but yeah. I mean, there's
no, for me, it's not about talent. It's about commitment. You have to find the right people. Talent is, first of all, overrated. And you know, the question, what is talent? But if you find the right people with the right drive and self-motivation, that becomes easy. And Thando was from day one like that.
So now, Ray, from your perspective, you've seen all the greats. I mean, personally, up close and personal. What do you look for as well in a young athlete that you could potentially give advice to for Thando going forward?
Well, I look at commitment, and he's with one of the best sprint coaches in all of Africa, in Henny. And, you know, you have to look at commitment from the individual sprinter. It could be very lonely. It's not a team sport at all. And he has to listen to what the coach has to say, and he has to stay with the coach for a long period. I see in South Africa what happens with a lot of these athletes. They switch from coach like... You know, like candy. It's unbelievable. I stayed with my coach for 12 years, and Steve Scott had Lynn Miller for like 16 years. And it's a commitment, like Henny said. And I tell you, Thando is the real deal. I mean, to run sub 10 twice, and he's so young. He's only 22 years old.
Now, Thando, you've also had some setbacks in your young career. I think 2013, 2015, your hamstring was rather problematic. You then went to the World Champs. I remember watching you last year, and it was one of my most heartbreaking moments of last year. I was watching you, and you looked like you were fire that day. Unfortunately, you had a false start. So in your young time, you've already had setbacks. People have been telling you that you are the next big thing, all that kind of stuff. How do you balance this? And Henny, you can obviously chip in on this question here, because naturally you're a part of a support system. How do you balance your own expectations with actually just wanting to get out there and be a sprinter and be you?
How do I balance that? You know, actually, I don't really chase times and everything. All I want to do is come back, train, work hard, and run. And if I put on the right race plan at the right time, then I don't have to worry about anyone's expectation or my expectation. I just need to execute, and it will all come, yeah, so...
If I can add maybe to that, each coach, each athlete has got their own way of doing things. And I think sometimes the Hollywood movies tends to give us a wrong perspective on things. You know, it seems every time everything is planned. It's not like that. It's exactly what Thando says. If you put in the work, you can never predict. you've got sort of an idea, but you can see in the training an athlete is moving. But to put everything together, to go sub 10 on a specific day, everything needs to be in sync.
Yeah.
And you cannot always predict those things. So we tend not to focus too much on one specific race, one specific competition, but stay healthy, run fast. The other thing that I think, and we're going to maybe touch a little bit more on what is different what we do, I will shock a lot of coaches by saying we don't follow a very systematic periodization plan. What we try to do is to get them to run fast consistently,
yeah,
and on the right day, hopefully they can go faster. So you see what happened in the World Championships. If you had, if we put the whole season, everything on that race, and had a false start, where would have you been?
A nervous wreck.
So it's like any job. It's a journey, you know, and you're going to have your ups and you're going to have your downs. So my job is to get them stay healthy, be fast. You know, in the old days, when I competed, competition was 3 months. Now they compete 6-7 months. You cannot be slow in any time during that time.
Sure.
So you need to be fast, and hopefully they end with the big meetings a little bit faster. If you look at Bolton, these guys, they run consistently fast.
How do you keep them at that level without burning them out, Coach?
Yeah. Ray, I'll be honest with you. I've got experience in professional rugby and athletics. The big problem in sport in the world is overtraining.
True.
It's overtraining. So having them, like today, Tandu was supposed to have a gym session this morning. He came in, he said to me, Coach, I'm flat. We postpone. There's right. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. Where normally coaches will get excited. No, you have to. And then you start overtraining. Overtraining is a much bigger problem than undertraining.
Well, with your rugby background would suggest that. I mean, those guys, they look to be running on empty most parts of the season.
Again, and I've been away from that sport now for a number of years, since 2005. And we had a very successful period with the Blue Bulls from 2000 to 2005. We yes. played in 4 finals and won 3.
Of course,
and it's probably my biggest contribution was to get the coaches to believe to do less and not more.
Oh, wow.
That's incredible, because the moment you don't win, people start questioning commitment. Mm. So, I mean, that's a real mature decision.
We're not yet to talk rugby, but I'll tell you this. A team that's overtrained tends to go down the last 20 minutes. And if you don't know the difference, you think they are undertrained. So come Monday, you hit them.
Yeah.
Your problem becomes bigger.
Yeah, Henny, you were involved in track and field. You started in track and field. I mean, you trained Myrtle Boltman, one of the greatest 400 hurdle runners in the world, and still holds a South African record from 1986. Why did you leave track and field and go to rugby and then come back to track and field?
Yeah, it's easy, right? I mean, track and field has always been my first love, but rugby became a professional sport in 1995, end of 1995, 96. And one of the provincial sides, the SWD Eagles, they really suffered. They lost their last three matches in 96 by more than 100 points. So they appointed a new coach, a friend of mine. And by talking to him, he asked me, would I like to come as the conditioning specialist? And I grabbed the opportunity. I stayed in that sport for 9 years. And that
Sorry,
helped
may
me.
I just suggest that friend was Heineke Meyer, right?
No, it was Phil Pretorius. Uh-huh. So Heineke was the assistant coach.
Okay.
And I met with Heineke there. Phil left after 1 year, got another opportunity, and me and Heineke stayed together. So the 9 years I spent in rugby, I spent with Heineke. So those years helped me a lot. Professional, because rugby became professional. And athletics in South Africa today is not a professional sport.
True.
But that professional background helped me a lot, and it taught me a lot, and also helped me to work with a group of people. So in I don't want to talk about my group, because it's my group, but let's say my training group currently is between 30 and 40 athletes, different events.
Wow.
So work with a team helped me a lot. And there's only one way. You need to be disciplined with those kids. They need to have discipline. If you don't have that, you cannot. I cannot coach one or two athletes. It's just not me. I like to work with different athletes, different events, and I think the rugby taught me a lot in that respect.
Yeah, Henny, how do you keep your athletes? Because like I mentioned earlier, athletes seem to hop ship every single month. Mm. How do you keep the Tondos? How do you keep the great athletes to stay with you as a coach?
Well, maybe you should ask them that. I don't keep them all. And I sometimes ask athletes to go, because I sometimes for their benefit. Not all coaches can coach all athletes. It's like a relationship.
Sure.
It's a relationship. And not all people can work together. And you have to realize that. And I sometimes ask athletes to go. The thing is this. You're mentioning athletes jumping ship, and the first problem they experience, they want to move. You have to go through that. We only learn through mistakes.
Sure.
You cannot, after the first mistake, it's like Tandu. We had to go through all this, and we're still learning. A coach needs to, let's go back to the rugby. You know you're going to lose some matches. What? That's when you learn. You don't learn when you win the matches. You learn when you're losing it. Mm-hmm. So it's the same with athletics. And successful coaches are those that has got the ability to learn through those processes. If you don't, and Heineken is a very good example. You know, our first year Super 12, we only won one game. The second time we lost all 11 matches. And he came through that and he became a very successful coach. You have to learn through those experiences.
Just getting back to the schedule, of course, there's the South African Championships this week coming up. Now, Tando's not going to be taking part in that. You feel that it's not a decent enough time for him. He's got some niggles. How do you guys start the season together, looking at where you're going to pinpoint your sort of times to sort of shine, so to speak? I know you said about being consistently fast throughout the season, but do the two of you sit together and look at a schedule and plan a year out on the back of that?
Not completely like that. Last year was different from this year. This year we haven't done it because we had to see how he respond on treatment because he had a serious Achilles problem. So we haven't done it. Last year was different. So last year the emphasis was on world students, which was 2 weeks after the world championships. So when he hit form, world championships became part of that. So we were fairly successful in that he finished second at the World Students. He really wanted to break the South African record and win that. So we didn't achieve that, but he came second. So he had a successful competition. So last year we did that, not this year. So it depends on the specific athlete. This year is what we would maybe call a low-key year, and there's no World Championships. This Commonwealth, it's very soon. It's in April. So for this year, for most of the top sprinters and hurdlers, I see going to try to reach Diamond League level and get into international competition. So there's no one big focus for this year. Maybe Africa Championships for some of them to go to World Cup. But it's not the same as a World Champ. Next year, the next 2 years will be very important.
Okay. Now, this is a question that, I mean, I as a sports fan will always ask. I mean, your day-to-day sort of normal week, Tando, like, I mean, training-wise, track time, gym time, you know, like, what are the sort of elements that you go through on a Monday to Sunday? Like, what's your sort of average week?
You know, it's pretty systematic. You know, Monday morning, Wednesday morning, Friday morning, you've got your gym session, and then recover in between that. Then in the afternoons, you've got your track sessions. Then also on Tuesday more mornings, you have like your mobility sessions. And then in the afternoon, you have your track sessions. So it's pretty systematic. And you know what you have to do and when to do it. So, yeah.
Are you the kind of athlete that likes structure, though? Or are you asking Henny to like jazz things up from time to time? I mean, do you like things to be shaken up?
I'm the kind of athlete that likes structure because I believe, like, you have to be in the routine. You have to live in it. You have to, you know.
Tandu is a more of a left-brain person, so he's organized. A lot of the other athletes not. So as a coach, I'm also a left-brain person. So it helped me a lot to put structure to things. But I also realize a lot of the athletes are more right-brain orientated people that they don't like that structure. And I have to move in between that. Mm. So the challenge with Tandu is to sometimes to get him a little bit out of that structure because everything is not always structured.
So
I want to know what your secret weapon is in that 100 meters. Because every 100 meter guy has, well, I got a great start, I got a great finish, I accelerate. What is Tando the Rock's secret weapon in that 100 meters?
You know, actually, I don't want to have a secret weapon. I actually want to have a very solid start in the middle, acceleration, and the finish. So, okay. But most people always say, you have a great start, you have a great start. But I actually want to have a solid race. Completely. So
I've seen your start. You look like Ben Johnson, the younger Ben Johnson. You just get out. You fly out of those blocks, man.
Yeah, maybe I can contribute to that. Yeah, definitely. He's a powerful starter. He's what we call a powerful, a power sprinter.
Yep.
So the start is important. But one of the system that we follow is what we call a short to long system. You know, when I speak to athletes, coaches, when you go to the track, you will see athletes doing over distance. Early on, focus a lot on endurance. But if you ask athletes or coaches, what is more difficult to improve, your speed or your endurance, they will tell you speed. So why do you start in with endurance? We start with speed. We start with short. Every race you need to come out of the blocks. If the first 30 is in place, you can go to 40. You can go to. Why do you want to start working on the last 10 meters? It just doesn't make sense.
You know, Henny, it's amazing you say that. In 1988, I was in Canada at York University watching Ben Johnson.
Yeah, they
spent 2 to 3 hours just working on a start. Yeah. I said, dude, is that all you do? He says, I have to have the greatest start in the world. Yeah. How amazing is that? That's what he said to me.
Well, that's where we learned it. East coach Charlie Francis, deceased today. That's where I learned it. I didn't invent this myself. I can put a man on the moon if you give me the right manual.
But now, Henny, as far as, like, we all know that the 100 meters is about split seconds. It's not seconds. It really is. It's just the pressure alone. It's like a well-orchestrated dance. Every stride matters. From a coaching perspective with innovations and kind of stuff, like, your job seems hugely difficult because you've got to keep up with the trends. You've got to find what works for individual athletes. Is there something like, you know, do you have influences that in your life that you touch upon? Do you have other coaches that you're obviously resonating with on certain things? How do you keep yourself at the top of your game?
The internet. The internet is
wow. Can you believe it?
But I mean, is anybody?
It's out there. You know, they say that if you go into the internet, the information is on the internet to build the atomic bomb. Just need to know where to find it, how to put it together.
Good analogy. So the atomic bombing process here is U-turned, obviously.
Yeah.
I know you're heavily involved with the Puma School of Speed. You recently spent some time with Usain Bolt. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone will come to you and say, oh, well, did you learn from him? You know, do you emulate him? Like, have you had hero symbols in your life? I mean, that's the hardest thing for sports because everybody wants to emulate somebody, but you need to be yourself. Like, when it comes to, like, meeting Bolt, like, what were the things that you guys would talk about in the few moments that you have?
You know, actually, we didn't really got to speak with him because, you know, he was here for a short time with us, but what he said in one of the interviews, he reemphasized what Coach always says, that you need to put in the hard work in the training and you need to stay motivated and you need to stay healthy. He reemphasized it and he confirmed what Coach was always saying because, you know, he's a retired now and he's still the world record holder. So with me, what he said, I really believe and confirmed what Coach always said. So, yeah.
But it's kind of nice because sometimes I know children and parents have this problem all the time, is that parents dispense fantastic information because they do it all the time. You almost need someone else to mimic it somewhere else, and then it really resonates and hits home. But it's interesting what you said about times. I remember I was at the press conference, and Bolt said, it's not about the times. It's not about getting here and running a certain time. It's about getting here and beating the other guys. The time is almost a bonus after that, which, I mean, for any young person, I mean, Ray, you would know this from various milestones that people gravitate towards because they want to stand out, is that people get so hung up on times that they forget about doing the basics and realizing it's all about the starts, about the drivers, about all these different things. I mean, do you see sometimes, Henny, in your work that some people come to you and say, I want to run, and they give you a time. Can we do that?
You see, I'm different from what Bolt said there. Winning is a product of your time. I will put you in a race that you can win every time, but if I tell you the race, you will not be interested. I just put you against 12-year-old kids, and you will win every time.
so true.
I try to get the athletes to run as fast as possible, as fast as they can run. If that is fast enough on the day to beat other guys, they will beat them. Obviously, when you're in the blocks, there is a competition you want to win. But it's execution. Everything, the reaction, the block work, everything, that will give you a specific time. So you race to win. I don't want to take that away. But my job is to get them to run as fast as possible consistently.
Now, the question's got to be asked around altitude and sea level. Now, you know, we obviously are here in Johannesburg. You guys train at Tux in Pretoria. Altitude is always a big factor. And there's no doubt. I mean, you will get better times at altitude if you're a long jumper, high jumper, all these kind of things. It definitely helps. How do you structure Tando's sort of training in that? Is he getting enough sea level stuff? Is he getting enough sea level training? If a majority of competition is going to be at sea level, I mean, do you guys take that into consideration as well?
No. We stay in Pretoria. That's what we've got. We've got a fast track. We've got altitude. 9 days out of 10, the wind will be a tailwind. We use that. We cannot simulate coastal training. But I never discuss this with the athletes. We never say, oh, now we're going to run in Durban. So I can tell you from the youngsters, they don't understand the difference. Because some of my the other younger boys, I can mention Gift Lotela. He's got the same time at coastal level than he's got in Pretoria.
Wow.
Because I don't discuss that. Obviously, it's a use advantage for us. I mean, Tando ran a 9.95 in Pretoria. You know what? When it came to signing contracts and getting into diamond leagues, didn't hold him back because it's out there.
Good.
No,
very
it's
good.
Out there. He signed a good contract with Puma based on his time that he can run. For him, luckily, on that day, he raced Akani. Akani just beat him in a race. So he raced another athlete.
That race.
All right. So obviously, it's our advantage, and I try to use that advantage. It gives you confidence. Running 9.95 gives you a huge advantage and confidence.
Breaking 10.
So we don't focus on that because I cannot change that.
Yeah. Going back to the Puma School of Speed, Tando, tell us what position you have with that wonderful School of Speed and what exactly do you do, you and Usain Bolt?
I'm currently the vice principal to the principal, Usain Bolt. So what I do is I fill in for him and go to all the competitions, motivate the kids, meet and greet, small chats, give tips where I can, and also take pictures and sign autographs with the kids and have fun with them.
How did you get that position? Because that's a high position.
He ran
right underneath
the
same boat.
Excuse me. Yeah, okay, 9.95. You deserve it, buddy.
Well, I mentioned he's a Puma-sponsored athlete, and I use him for those purposes.
So just talking about the kids, you know, obviously this, what I love is how, you know, Gatlin came here recently and there was a packed out Tuck Stadium. Kids are getting involved in athletics. I think if you're going to get a sport that's going to unify communities, it's not really rugby, cricket, football, whatever, because there's still areas to, boundaries to entry there. But we got talent, we got kids that can run. You get a track together and you've got something really, really special. Seeing what you guys have seen between the two of you, and you can both answer this question, where do you see SA Athletics in, say, Olympics in the future? I mean, how realistic a chance have we got to taking up the next level and having the likes of Akani Tando the next level after that, competing for the 100-meter Olympics gold and the 200 meters?
I mean, we've got no excuses. We've got a population of 50 million plus. We've got the best weather in the world. We've got no excuses. We should have been there a long time ago. Yeah, for me it's a personal drive. You know, I used to compete in apartheid times South Africa. I qualified in 1980 for the Olympics, couldn't go, and I just didn't want to see the next generation, today's generation, to be withheld from those opportunities. I'm not here to criticize anyone, but the team we sent last year to World Championships, in my mind, is just not good enough. We should not send only people that can win medals. So we should give people opportunity. And the potential is unbelievable. I can tell you stories. Ray the other day was on a track. I introduced him to a young boy, Sokokwana Zazini. Sure. You know, he's the world record holder in 400 hurdles for youth. He's the world champion. And it's not just the world record. Just to put it in perspective, the world record used to be 48.9 by American. The second best time in the world ever was a 49.6. So that world record was already an outlier.
That's a skip, yeah.
Sox ran 48.8, breaking that world record, running on his
incredible
own. So he's now a first gen. So those kind of talents is walking around us. So we've got we should get these kids running those fast.
Kenny, you talk about selection. Do we have the right scouts that select the proper athletes to go to the World Champions, to go to the Olympic Games? Because if we don't, we will never be able to bring back those wonderful medals. So I just want your opinion. How are we going to get there? You said we should have been there years ago. Mm. How are we going to get there? Because Japan is a couple years away.
Yeah, Ray, it's obvious difficult questions to answer those because I don't want to criticize. You see, my philosophy is this. Each one's got a job to do. My job is to coach, Tando is to train. People need to select teams, needs to do that. People need to get funding, needs to do that. So I can focus and comment on my job. Obviously, as I said, I already said, I don't think we had a right situation last year. We should have sent more. But athletics to me is a business.
Absolutely.
For Tando, it's a business. So we don't only train for world championships. It is a highlight. It is out there. But that's not always in our hands. Okay? So athletes like Tando, I teach them from day one to see it as a journey, to get the exposure, to go to Europe, to make money, to become a professional athlete. And World Championship and even Olympic Games is part of that. It's not the only thing. You know, Kim Collins now retired. For a couple of years, his country didn't select him because he was in dispute with him. He didn't go to World Championship, didn't go to Olympic Games. At the end of his career, they selected him again. He had a wonderful career. So you don't have to go to those big meetings. So it's not always in the athlete's hands. So I don't want to focus too much on that. I help the kids to run fast, make it a business. And once you're on that level running 995, you can make a business out of it. You can earn good money out of the sport.
How fast can Tando go in your mind's eye?
That was my next question, too. Wait, hang on a second.
You know,
should we get Tando to answer this one first?
Yeah. How fast do I think I can go? I think if everything connects, training, the motivation, staying healthy, I think I can go really fast.
really fast?
You know, you can't, as coach said, you cannot predict time, but I think I can break my 995 and go even faster. Yeah, so I can go really fast.
Right.
Well, I personally think his goal should be in the 9.7s, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't go 9.7s.
I was thinking that also.
Yeah. And that will take a lot, but I think he understands himself a lot better. He stands and understands the training program. So I think in another 2-3 years that is possible.
See, 9.7 gets you in the big leagues.
Yeah.
You start winning, all the sponsors come in, all the invitations come. And,
well, Ray, you said about medals. If you want to win medals at the big stage.
Or even get on the podium.
Yeah.
Now, we all know there's some great talent coming through. So, Tando, what's like the rivalry like between you and, say, Akani or Anasa Jabadwana? I mean, when you guys go to these meets or when you see each other in training or just in passing, I mean, do you guys all kind of get along or is that sort of like, you know, natural kind of competitiveness against you guys?
You know, it's kind of different because we have like the life outside the track and then we have the life on the track. So the life outside the track is we meet at HPC, we greet, we have supper, meals because we're all based in the same camp. But when we get on to the track, it's like switches. It's warrior mode. You have to tunnel vision. So, yeah, so we have that, you know, split kind of personality type of thing going on. But, yeah, the relationships are good, yeah.
But now when you feel like you go on the international stage, because the level is so strong here in South Africa, I mean, do you feel it's less daunting to make that leap because the guys you're training against are already world class?
Yeah, it is less daunting, and also having to run fast times here in South Africa, it also gives you that confidence booster that actually I'm here with these guys and racing against guys like Akane, Wade, Joe Botwana. You're racing against one of the best athletes in the world, and if you get to beat them here at home, then you know you can do it out there.
It's a little bit different going to Europe. You know, if you run here in South Africa and you get beaten with one of those, it's a bit of bragging rights, you know. People know and they will mention it. You go to Europe, you run a race there, you don't know the other 7 athletes. Mm. You might know their names. Tomorrow morning, you're on the bus to the airport in another race, 7 different athletes. So it's sort of a bit easier if you have a bad race in Europe than here in South Africa. The pressure is heavy in South Africa. You're racing the same guys often. You sort of know what to expect. In Europe, it's totally different. You know, don't know the athletes. And then something else I want to mention. I picked up on a Diamond League, going to Diamond Leagues. You know, when the Americans and the Jamaicans come there, they overpower you. They're loud. They play the music, you know. They take space up in the warm-up area. They intimidate you. So I picked up on this. We've got a huge advantage because they only speak English. So when the South African athletes comes together and they start speaking Khoza and Zulu, it worries those athletes. They don't know what you're saying. I saw them. They're looking up. They're not comfortable with that. And I think we as South African athletes, although we compete against each other, should use that as a weapon against they're uncomfortable when they speak in Khoza and Zulu. And
it's a great point.
Coach, it's amazing you said that because that was my next question. How does he handle the pressure? Because the pressure in 100 meters is harder than anything, because now you're racing to be the fastest human, and you get some of these cocky Americans that strut their stuff. Yeah. I mean, it must be frightening, especially when you're coming up like a youngster like Tondo, because they try to intimidate you, as you just told us.
No, maybe Tondo should answer this as well. You know, it's amazing that his first reaction, coach, they're no different. You don't have to fear them. When you see them there in a warm-up, they are no different.
Yeah, because, you know, we tend to put them on a pedestal and think they're superhuman.
Yeah.
But actually, when we meet them, we see, this guy is like the next Joe I can meet back home in South Africa. And also having self-confidence that I've put in the work. I've ran that time. So I can do it. So having that self-belief inside that I can do it, it never bothers me that the next guy is going to come and be arrogant on me. I'm going to look at him and think, what are you doing?
Exactly. Like, not being fast.
Yeah.
And with all your expertise, with all your experience, what is like the kind of things you cannot teach or help Tondo with once he gets out there? I mean, in a day-to-day kind of life, because we all know lives change when you become a superstar, when you get your contracts, when you get into the big stage. What are the things that you know that no matter how hard you try, you can't actually help him with?
My philosophy around this is I don't make decisions for the athletes.
Right.
So I teach them from day one. They decide when they want to compete. I will tell them what I think is best. Even training. Tandu can this morning, he came and said, it's flat. I said, it's fine. Mm-hmm. What do you think? He said, no, we're going to. I think we should do mobility. I said, it's fine. He knows. He's not lazy. If an athlete wants to get out of a session because he's lazy, he will not make it. So it is something I think we've got a huge need for in our schools, in our homes, is for adults to teach young people to make decisions. You know, we don't do that. So in the group that I work with, I try to teach them to make their own decisions, because you can only take responsibility if you make your own decisions.
It's pure empowerment.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I don't really try to I try to teach them to be decent human beings, disciplined human beings. If I can teach them that, they will be successful. The training program is not a big part of the success.
The reason I ask that, because it must be in your position. Sometimes you feel like it becomes too consuming, like you want the best, and therefore you're willing to give the best. But it's almost like you've got to know where your limit is and be okay with that. And like you say, if you get the foundations right and empower decision-making, then your job is done in an overarching sense.
You know what? We always try to hear from the athlete, you know, what makes the difference? How do you feel? A coach goes through all of those himself, you know. If you don't have confidence, if you don't have self-belief, your athlete won't have that. So I like to put them under pressure. To come back to Sox, you know, Sox is a schoolboy. I allowed him the other day to compete against three Olympians, you know, and he beat them. So came Thursday, the big meeting, we had a world champion in that race. I pushed him into that race. I said, go, and he got club. He was first in that race. And what was great about him, he didn't sulk. He said, coach, that wasn't good enough. So you have to put them under pressure. If they cannot handle pressure, you cannot take that pressure. Coach should never try to take the pressure off them. You should put the pressure on them. That's when then you see the big ones that can take pressure.
So true. Ray, anything else from your side? I mean, we could chat to you guys for like all day or year. I mean, this is fascinating.
I feel great chatting here.
It's just such a great dynamic to have both of you in the studio, because there's so much that goes into, you know, obviously breeding the talent and the excellence to get onto the track.
Ben, when's the last time you had one of the best sprint coaches in Africa and a guy that runs sub 10 across from you? I mean, it's very rare. But Henny, in your own words, tell us what the business of sport is all about, in your own words.
Well, first of all, Ray, you need to understand and accept that it's a business.
Yes.
You know, I speak a lot to a lot of coaches. A lot of coaches, you will ask them, why do you coach? No, it's my hobby. And then after a while, they will start complaining about it's costing them. You know, a hobby costs you.
Yeah.
So the next level is you can maybe appoint it somewhere at a school and they pay you a salary. So now you start to, but then you work in the business, or you work, you earn a salary. To make money, you need to see it as a business. Okay. Now for me, it's a two-way perspective. First, business is about making money, but I see it as making performance, creating performance. I try to use business principles to create performance, because performance will bring in the money. So for an athlete, There's only one way, two ways, but you first get to a level where you sign a shoe deal to have a sustainable income, and then competing and signing more contracts with more sponsors. But you have to earn your money through the running as well. Going to Europe,
winning,
you have to win. Appearance fees, bonuses, those sort of things. So for me as a coach, the easy way is to coach 80 kids that pay you. I don't want to do that. I do coach more than 30 athletes, but that's not the reason. So coaching enough athletes with shoe contracts so they you start earning 5 or 10% from their earnings part of it. Well, you know, I'm on record with this. I don't do this for the money. But I pay my house, I pay my car, I go on vacation. I was 7 weeks in Europe last year, didn't cost me a cent.
You have to pay bills also, coach.
Yeah. So you have to use the principle, the business principles. And I think the biggest problem is athletes don't see it. Because if you're a soccer player, football player, rugby player, you sign a big contract, athletes first need to get to that level before they sign a contract. So, like in South Africa, we don't have a development system. We have an incentive system. When you're good enough, then they will give you money.
Yeah.
But you need to get there yourself. So staying healthy is very important, and that's expensive. So we need to find ways. The other day I read this powerful thing. To create a world-class athlete, you need to have a world-class system. So my job is to building systems. So I work very closely with an agent or agents because they understand the business. They know how to get these funding. We as coaches, we don't have that expertise. We should not try doing it.
Yeah.
We should focus, and I said it earlier in the talk, each one's got a job to do. So putting a system together, people with the same vision.
Yeah. The team.
The team.
Yeah.
The team. And it's an athlete-centered, coach-driven system.
Yeah.
That is very important.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Tony, just finally from you, again, more of a fan question. Three favorite things about being a professional athlete and three things that are maybe a lot more difficult that you don't always look forward to?
You know, I love the traveling. I love going to Europe. Cause
that's a good thing.
We all do, don't we?
I love that. I love the running against different types of athletes. Jamaicans, Japanese, Chinese, you know,
yeah,
that vibe. And I also love what from
sleeping late.
Yeah, sleeping late or sleeping early. But what I kind of dislike is the early mornings in Europe where you have to get onto the next train to the next bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I kind of have a problem with. But actually, other than that, nothing else.
Okay, yeah, so the pros heavily outweigh the negatives here. That's very, very
you
good.
See, they don't deal with the politics. The coaches deal with the politics.
Let's just hope not. Cool, guys. Well, so just from here, what does the rest of the season hold? I mean, where are we going to look out for Tando? Where are we going to see it? Where are we going to see his name in lights so that we know it gets
well,
excited?
As I said earlier, we haven't had fixed plans yet because we had to see how he responded on his injury. So we are now just started what we call a specific phase. We're done with it more of a general phase. He could take that. So now it's faster running, and immediately the body is reacting differently. He's a bit stiff. Because specific phase means running faster. But I foresee coming end of May, June, he might be able to start competing in Europe.
Cool. Henny, Tando, Ray, guys, thank you so much. That was hugely informative. And it's just, well, it's kind of my love for the athletics is growing each week. It really is. It's a shame I'm not going to see SA Champs, but we're going to see you there in the future. And 995, well, that's just for now. Who knows where the future's going to go. And I'm so excited to see where your progress is at.
Yeah, great. Thank you,
Ben. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, thank you. That was very nice.
Massively exciting talent is that Tando. He's such a nice guy as well. So, you know, he's a guy, early 20s, done so much. He's gone through the injuries, gone through the setbacks. And with a guy like Henny in his corner, well, he's going to go through a lot of good, a lot of success, and wish him all the best. There's so much talent in this country to see it shining on international tracks. Well, as a sports fan, as a South African, it all makes me feel very, very good. There is golf this week. It's the Tour Championship of the Sunshine Tour. So it's nice to see that these guys are getting a few more extra events till late in the season. There was the Stain City Team Competition. But more importantly, the Tour Championships, because it's nice to be able to sort of just bring everything together. Even though the Sunshine Tour isn't going to compete ever, of course, against the big events, so the big tours like the USPGA, the European Tour, even the Asian Tour, there are some great events on this. And just for the local guys who are committed to it,
to have it all come together into one event, it's just a nice little bit of closure. George Casier, he's of course top of the Sunshine Tour Order of Merit, that win in Pretoria at the Swane Open. That was a big deal for him. So he's just under a shade in 3 million rand. Eric van Rooyen's in second, just under 2.4. And then JC Ritchie, he's in third, just over 2 million. So, look, it's George. He's going to win it from here. So if you're in the general Gauteng area, the Serengeti Golf Estate is near the Owatambo International Airport. Get on down and support the guys. Live golf is lots and lots of fun. So last week I was at Fancourt for the BMW Golf Cup International World Final. It is the world's biggest amateur golfing tournament. So much fun. So much fun. You play three rounds if you're one of the final contestants. So basically, what the dealership network does for BMW around the world is they have these regional Golf Cup International events. So you do well there and you win your division. There's two divisions. There's men, A, B, women, and then just basically there's three spots up for grabs. You then go through to a national final, and if you win your national final, then you get to represent your country at the world final. So every year it's somewhere different. 5 years ago it was at Fancourt. I got to go be a part of it that time as well. And then this year, so the 2017 event takes place in 2018, so it's always the follow-on thing. And it was Fancourt, and it was incredibly successful. I mean, everyone, you have the time of your life for this event. I don't want to get into it because I've already made a great video. If you go onto the YouTube channel at Follow the Bounce, you'll see the full experience from my perspective, as well as playing the links. So I got to play the links. The players at the tournament themselves don't play it. It's a little bit difficult. But I got to do it, and it was just amazing. Before we wrap it up for this week, we need to talk cricket, and we need to talk how things are developing with the whole Kakisa Rabada ban, all the stuff around the SA Australia tour, because there's so much drama off the field. And I just see today, I woke up to see a tweet of Werner Philander basically having a go at Steve Smith, saying, you know, it's the first time I've seen the footage, and it looks like Steve's definitely milking it. I'll read a few word for word. This is Werner Philander's account, VDP_24. Haven't really seen the footage of this incident, but by the looks of this, because now he's taken a screenshot, or he's taken a shot from Supersport of the incident of brushing shoulders. He says, Steve Smith gave KG the shoulder. He could have avoided any contact, but to me, he's just as guilty. Trying some football skills to get a penalty, pity he didn't dive to top it off. So that was one through Vern's account. And then a few hours later, he then follows up with the, good morning, all my tweeps. Waking up this morning to a lot of Twitter craziness as my account got hacked and someone posted a nice little article on my behalf. Sorry for all the drama or entertainment caused by the looks of it. Have a great day, all. Yeah, well, we'll get into that in this week's vlog. But we need to get into what's going to happen around this whole appealing of the suspension for Rabada. So, we know he's been given a 2-match suspension. Him and the cricket staff are getting the lawyers together. They have lodged an appeal, which means the ICC now have 48 hours to find an independent commissioner around this, and then within 7 days they actually have to put a hearing together and come up with a verdict, because the appeal process is as such. The way I see it, there's going to be three outcomes here. First up, either way, the ICC are in so much crap by putting themselves in this position where he's getting banned like this for what's happened. Yes, they can fall back on that whole rules is rules thing because of all the demerit points stacking up, and yes, that makes perfect sense. When you're a repeat offender, then you will get punished more and more severely as you go along. But we all know the nature of these offences is just so marginal. It's just the ICC are really being, they're making an example of someone who is, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't sit well, and a lot of people are just calling it petty. Anyway, so from the appeals process, I see it going three ways. They uphold the conviction, 2-match suspension, all done. Stay as we are right now. Or you get a reduced ban. So Rabada will just be suspended for the Cape Town test, which in a way makes for a dramatic final test, the Wanderers. Because if he comes back, and let's just say the Cape Town test is a draw, it's 1-1 going into the Wanderers, and Rabada comes back, that is pure theatre, it really is. The third case, which I don't see happening, is for the ban to be completely lifted. If this happens, then the ICC are in so much trouble, because going forward, they're going to have to be just as hard on other people, which means more bans, but that also then means more disputes around the bans, which means more appeals and long processes around if players are or not playing. Either way, the ICC have put themselves in the corner here, and I've got no sympathy for them. They have put themselves in a whole pile of mess, and it could have been avoided. I just think it's just so petty. And to prove this, I'm going to play for you a couple of clips of Australians just being Australians, just being out on the field. Remember when Josh Hazlewood got a third umpire decision, didn't go his way, despite the fact that it was clearly bat before pad? This was against New Zealanders. Ah, crap, sorry. Put this thing in here. One day, I'm going to be so polished on this show, it's going to be amazing. Anyway, Josh Hazlewood, after his appeal, didn't get met with the result that he wanted.
Question him and be angry like
that's
that.
Who the fuck is third umpire?
Yeah, you heard that. You heard that, didn't you? He...
him and be angry like
that's
that.
Who the fuck is third umpire?
I quote, who the fuck is third umpire? Did he get suspended for two matches? He directly questioned, firstly, the decision, which is, that's a no-no. Secondly, he actually questioned the nature of the third umpire, who the fuck he is, and that was fine. That's cool. Let's just carry on. Remember Michael Clark versus James Anderson? Okay, look, I mean, you have to like or dislike James Anderson, but how about this?
Get ready for a broken fucking arm.
Get ready for a broken fucking arm. it's awesome. It's great. No biggie, right? I mean, he's just basically threatening the guy with physical harm. Yeah, that's fine. Did he get banned for two matches? Of course he didn't. He's stupid. General, it just seems that the ICC don't want you saying horrible things. I mean, you just can't do it. Here's Andrew Simons just having a bit of a bowl, and then while fielding a ball, he comes into contact with a batsman who's kind of minding his own business.
Simons. Well fielded.
Oh, you fucking bastard.
Oh, dear, oh dear.
Dear, oh dear indeed, though, Laurie. Oh, yeah.
Well fielded.
Oh, you fucking bastard.
Oh.
Did he get suspended? Did he get demerit points? Of course he didn't. No. What about, this is the thing about the suspension and stuff, because again, if ICC are going to stick to this, that is their thing, okay, cool, but this ungentlemanly conduct, it's bringing the game into disrepute. How about something like this? If all these rules are going to be upheld, because the ICC have got to be consistent now, what about wicketkeepers who are incessantly just talking and talking shit behind the stumps? Surely they fall into a category, right?
Nice, Gary!
Just a little bit. That's too short. That's when a wicketkeeper is constantly in your ear like Wade is here. Did it annoy you? Did you want to turn around and say, mate, seriously?
Yeah, occasionally there was a keeper that really get under your skin. It's, if there was a spinner bowling for a long time and you're that close.
Nice, Gary!
And the ball comes out of the middle of the bat and there's all this cheering and
just like that one. Yeah, I turn around and say, mate, what's nice about that? It's hit the middle of my bat.
Generally, they're known to be chirpers, aren't they, the keepers? Stands up, plays it well. But good pressure applied here. It's a bowling partnership that could bring about a wicket. They're still going. It's a lot more secure in behind. So pushing forward. Yep, one bad shot is going to bring Fuff du Plessis in, mate. Yeah, Fuff du Plessis just got 100. He's in pretty good form, Wadey.
Now, of course, I believe cricket, so it's a contact sport. You're making contact, bat, ball. It's hard. Test cricket is hard. It's nuts. That's why I love it. So I'm all for this. If people can talk, they can sledge, all that kind of stuff. Australians will talk about that line, so to speak. But, I mean, it's a big boys' game. Kevin Peterson said it best. These guys, it'll all balance out. It's kind of like nature, right? It'll all balance it out. You'll end up shutting up when things get dealt to you. But if the ICC are going to uphold this whole thing about you can't talk in a certain direction, you can't say yes or whatever, whatever, then things are going to become so petty that the wicketkeepers can't talk and say stuff. This is where it's going. You may think I'm extreme, but this is exactly where it's going. And the ICC have put themselves into this horrible hole, and it's going to be rather funny seeing how they're going to fall out of it. Of course, what they'll do is they'll just do what they've been doing for so long and just back the ICE3, which is just India, Australia and England. And I hate harping on about this because it sounds like I'm just on the outside looking in and I'm having a cry. But I'm not, because these guys are... I mean, are they going to really tell Virat Kohli that he can't run from the slips and shout pissed off? Are they really going to tell him that? Of course they're not. Are they really going to tell David Warner that he can't keep muttering things about people's mothers as he walks in between overs? Of course they're not going to do that. KG Rabada, though, fired up fast bowler who's just turning the world on its head right now because he's so bloody talented. Oh, no, no, he can't say anything. That's not really great. He can't say yes, yes, yes in the general direction of an Australian batsman. Of course not. But double standards and all that kind of stuff. That is the show for the week. Thanks so much for joining me. Catch me on Twitter at Follow the Bunts. Otherwise, catch me right here on cliffcentral.com every Monday to Friday, just after 6:40 a.m. live with your daily sportscasts. Otherwise, just on the Bunts, you'll see what else are there. You'll find the daily sportscast, this podcast, and a whole bunch more. Catch you back next week.
This is cliffcentral.com.